A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Dobrý večer and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow.
Good evening and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dow from the History of Alchemy Podcast.
One of the more beautiful sights in Prague is the Charles Bridge. Summertime tourists cross this attraction by the thousands for picturesque shots of the city or the mighty Vltava River below. Yet it's hard to picture the chaos that took place on this bridge in 1648. The scene was a hectic free-for-all between all advancing Swedish troops and the civilian Praguers defending the entrance to Old Town. Poor and wealthy alike stacked debris and rubble under the Coronation Bridge gate to hold off the marauding Swedes from laying waste to all of Prague. Hand-to-hand combat would ensue. The Thirty Years' War would cause a great deal of bloodshed to the Czech and Moravian people. The world must have seemed to come undone during the height of this Counter-Reformation. Trav, throughout the history of our podcast, we've touched on the heavy weight of the Thirty Years' War and its impact upon Prague and the Bohemian people. Tonight, we focus on one of the darker times in European history when the Swedes ran roughshod through all of Bohemia and Moravia at the height of the Thirty Years' War.
That's right, Pete. But before we dive into the Battle for Prague or the subsequent Siege of Brno in Moravia, let's provide some background on the Swedes' rise to power and their role in the Thirty Years' War. The Danish War in 1625 helped to draw lines between Swedes and the Danes, and thus empower the Swedish war machine under Gustav Adolf. After several attempts by the Holy Roman Empire to prevent the spread of Protestantism in Europe, King Gustav II Adolf of Sweden ordered a full-scale invasion of the Catholic states. Although he's killed in action, his armies successfully defeated their enemies and gave birth to the Swedish Empire after proving their ability in combat. Now, the subsequent Swedish War brought the Swedes to flex their political and military muscles on German soil in the 1630s. There is much we are leaving out here for the sake of brevity, but one thing you must let sink in is the Swedes were now major players on the continent and would have a say in the Thirty Years' War like no other. By 1635, the Swedes were gathering forces to face off with the anti-Habsburg coalition. The Swedes agreed to join forces with the French, and thus the bloodiest part of the Thirty Years' War raged on.
We talk about the Thirty Years' War, and this is something that if you're, you know, just kind of reading a couple books on history, you're not really interested so much in history, but maybe you want to dive in a little bit and knowing some of the major benchmarks of humanity's struggle, especially when it comes to issues of religion and power struggles within Western Europe. You have to really look at the Thirty Years' War. Get re-engaged with this Thirty Years' War. It had so much devastation and caused so much change within the empires of Western Europe that it's a shame that it doesn't get as much attention as it should. Mercenaries that were running roughshod across all of Western Europe, such as the Swedish mercenaries, Europe basically agreed to kind of forego with doing mercenaries for a very long time.
We've mentioned it before, but if you think about it, mercenaries don't have any sort of national loyalty. They're basically just fighting for the highest bidder, right? So what that means is they don't care what country they're in. They don't care if they're a Holy Roman Empire or Bohemia, the Austrian Empire, you name it. They'll just, you know, take what they want. They live off the land. In fact, that's cheaper for whoever's funding the war to just say, hey, yeah, you know, pillage and live off the land. However, what that means is the 30 Years' War ended up devastating 10% of the population to kind of disappeared, and that sounds like a high enough number already, but when we're talking about Bohemia, Central Germany, and Silesia, we're actually talking about more like 50 to 70%. And then the rest of Germany and around there, 30%. That is crazy. So whole villages got wiped out. And then, yeah, part of the peace treaty was saying, okay, first of all, now we should probably have standing armies and abolish this mercenary forces once and for all.
For our American listeners, this, you might equate this to maybe Sherman's march to the sea on steroids. There was no holds barred on this one. They would raise cities to the ground, kill and murder and rape all across the Moravia and Bohemia. And the Swede army did just that as they marched right through the heart of this nation, all the way to the from one end of the Bohemian lands back to the other. War was coming to the Czech people, and there would be blood to pay. As we're getting closer to the siege of Brno and, of course, the Battle of Prague, let's name some of the players that are very important to this conflict, and we'll start with the Swedes. Count Hans Christoph von Königsmark was the son of Conrad and Beatrix, and he was a Swedish-German soldier who commanded the Sweden's legendary Flying Column. Now, the Flying Column was a very quick-moving force. That's why they called him the Flying Column, which played a key role in Gustav Adolf's strategy. He was best remembered for his leadership in this very same Battle of Prague in 1648. Lennart Tortensen was remarkable for his extraordinary and incalculable rapidity of his movements through the very frequency that he had to lead his army through one form of battle to another. His infirmities would not permit him to mount a horse, but yet it did not really kind of tone him down as far as being a fierce warrior. He was often considered one of the most scientific artillery officers of the day and most successful engineer of the Swedish army. So when you're talking about moving from over mountains and waterways and trying to make bridges and trying to transverse enemy territory, you wanted this guy with you. All right. And Travis, let's look at the other side of this. Who was leading the civilians of Prague to stop the Swedes from coming over the bridge?
We have Count Rudolf Colloredo Valsee,
who did his best to basically keep the Swedes out of Prague.
We really want to paint you a picture, and if you were to take a tour here at Prague Castle, the reason I say Prague Castle because that place was looted by the Swedes when they could not cross a bridge, but the main reason that they couldn't cross a bridge that any tour guide will tell you was because the citizenry of Prague came to the rescue. They put boxes and anything they could get their hands on that could be movable to on the bridge as a blockade, stop the Swedes from moving with their guns and with their artillery to get to Old Town, because I knew once that happened, it was done. The reputation of the Swedes preceded them. And Count Colloredo von Valsee was the guy that was leading the civilians to stop this from happening. So now we're gathered in knee-deep in the Battle of Prague in 1648. And this happened on July 25th through November 1st of 1648. So it was kind of a drawn-out battle, bits and pieces. As we're talking about this one particular action during the war on Charles Bridge. And this was the last action of the 30 Years of War. General Hans Christoph von Königsmark commanded Sweden's flying column, as we mentioned, and he entered the city, was defended by the Field Marshal Rodolfo Colorado Mels Wallasey, a former Wallenstein general and a veteran of the siege of Mantua, and was at the Battle of Lützen and captured Prague Castle on the western bank of the Vltava River. The Swedes attempted to enter the Old Town on the eastern bank of the river, but were repulsed by Charles Bridge by Colloredo's men.
And by the way, if Wallenstein sounds familiar, that's because Johannes Kepler predicted his death. So here we go, we tie it all together again.
When the 3rd Swedish Army, commanded by Prince Carl Gustav, came close to Prague, all three Swedish armies launched a number of attacks against the city that, thanks to the energy of Field Marshal Colorado and their citizen soldiers, including Jews and students of Academic Legion, offered a strong fortifications of resistance. We talked about throwing anything they could to blockade on the bridge. This kind of gives you another sort of American parallel, because this doesn't happen too often, folks. When a city is under siege or there's a battle that has to be won, those boundaries that you have during normal life, such as religion or status or whatever you may take it, they go by the wayside because now this is a battle of survival. This was very interesting for the sense of, you were maybe compare it to the battle of New Orleans with President Andrew Jackson. That was actually a ragtag group of Americans. We're talking Native Americans. We're talking freed slaves. We're talking enchained slaves. We're talking pirates, and the future president of the United States. all trying to stop the British from taking over New Orleans at the Battle of the War of 1812. So this is very similar. It didn't matter what section of life you were in Prague, or what your status was in life, or who you were, or what god you actually worshipped. You were going to fight, and you were going to stop the Swedes from coming in. It was just a good idea to do so. So when in November Gustav received a report about the sign of peace, he ordered his troops to leave. Unable to enter the city, the Swedes settled for looting the castle. That wasn't so pleasant. So they couldn't get across to Old Town across the Flatopa River, so they backtracked. As they left the city, they left hardly anything unturned. And if you take a tour of Prague Castle, you'll see a lot of wonderful things in St. Vitus Cathedral, but you won't see a lot of the leftover works of art that were basically destroyed. You might see bits and pieces of it, but you'll from Kutná Hora to Prague to Brno in southern Moravia, there's just bits and pieces of treasure that are left over. Maybe just sections of giant panoramic paintings that weren't completely destroyed that they kept, and they still house in the museum in Prague Castle. Many of these treasures collected by Emperor Rudolf II, which we mentioned many times on this show, such as the Codex Gigas and the Codex Origitus, were all taken by Sweden and sent off basically to Stockholm by fortified horse and drawn carriage. Right, so they wanted to get it back to Stockholm pretty quickly. And a lot of this stuff can be found in Drottningholm Palace in Stockholm. Now, there are a few monuments, Travis, that are erected. Maybe we can talk to some of those about this particular battle on the bridge here in Prague. And most of these are basically an honor towards the General Colorado.
Yeah, so that monument is on Colorado's tomb in the Maltese Order Church in Prague, which, by the way, that is an awesome church. It's hard to find, which makes it even more awesome, but it's right downtown. And it's kind of to remind the victory over the Swedish. And it says, "Here lies Rudolf, Count Colorado, Imperial and Royal Feldmarshal and Grand Prior of the Order of Malta, defender of the old and new town of Prague against the Swedes."
And then on Charles Bridge, you might see this, and there's a lot of statues and commemorations on Charles Bridge, and of course a lot of tourists, so it might be kind of hard to find this, but this is a very unique inscription from the 17th century Latin inscription that's actually on the bridge. Quote, "Rest here, Walker, and be happy. You have stopped here willingly, but unwillingly were stopped by the Goths, or known as the Swedes, and their Vandalic ferocity." All right, so that very interesting sort of tip to the cap to the stopping of the Swedes and basically the fact that they were going to vandalize everything in Prague. Very interesting. So that's our focus on Prague, but let's kind of move on down D1, which is the modern-day highway, a two-hour drive southeast of here towards the city of Brno, the second largest city in the Czech Republic. Now, Travis, you've probably been to Brno a couple times. I've been there several times and actually gone to Spielberg Castle, which is on a giant mount in the middle of the city. A very unique city, but it's got a history of its own. And one thing that kind of links Prague with Brno is the sense that they were both attacked by the Swedes. Brno, under the Swedish siege in 1645, was the only city which successfully fended off the Swedish pressure, or more precisely, the siege, and allowed the Austrian Empire to reform its army and resist the Swedes. During this process, military leader Radeau de Sosiers, who's a former Swedish soldier, I don't know if I said that correctly, but I gave it a good try, and the Swedish rector Father Martin Streda, but played both important roles. As a reward, the city's privileges were renewed, and Brno also got a new symbol for the city itself. And of course, I actually got to see in the symbol, you see the symbol, there's a lot of symbolism in the coat of arms in the city of Brno that pays homage to this. But I got a chance to see a reenactment last summer of the attack by the Swedes on Spielberg Castle. And when I say you have to walk up the steepest part of that mountain right there, they have the big hill in the middle of the city, it is unbelievably steep. And these reenactors were carting real cannons up basically a 45 degrees sort of incline at some place, and they were just pulling and pushing with several men to get the cannons up to the top. And that's really what they said happened, as the Swedes had a hard time trying to get their cannons atop of the largest precipices in all of Brno. The final phase of the 30 Years' War was a defense of Brno, as we mentioned, and it prevented the advance to Vienna. So this was like the last line in the sand that could stop the Swedes from actually going down to Vienna to sack this empire. And it clearly showed off the identification of the inhabitants, Catholicism, and the Habsburg monarchy. So there was that connection that might have been not so strong in Prague, but it was in Brno. The defense of Bruno actually also saved the city of Olomouc, which was a very important seat and bishopric to all of that area of Moravia. The anniversary of this was celebrated as the town's holiday on August 15th. Moreover, you will see that these one descendant of the Swedish general is in each family in Moravia. Everyone wants to take credit for that, of course. And this is at least what most people say. But Travis, there's actually a very famous legend that will kind of throw you off if you want to set your watch to the church bells in Brno. You're going to be a little off. And that says everything to do with this battle and the siege by the Swedes.
So according to this famous legend, the siege took longer than the Swedish leader Torstensson had expected. Not 1 week, but 3 months. They were trying to seize the city and its castle Spielberg, and there's obviously no surprise there that their morale was pretty low. So Torstensson was furious, and he had to decide. So he called his officers over to a pub, as all good Czech legends have it, and said, "Tomorrow we shall make our last attack on the city. Before the bells on Petrov strike noon, Brno must be ours. If not, we shall retreat." Okay, but unfortunately for him, there was a man who could understand Swedish, and so he went over to the Moravians and let them know. So when it came to the final battle and the Swedes seemed to be winning, Such sent a bell ringer to strike 12 o'clock in St. Peter's Cathedral. But actually, it was only 11 o'clock. And in fact, it did make the Swedes withdraw. So since that day, the Petrov bells have always struck noon 1 hour before 12. Now in the capital of Moravia, you can remember this event every day at 11 a.m. when you hear the noon bells being rung.
So actually, that's a neat story that has at least some sense of truth that it does ring at 11 a.m. So be careful with your watch on that one. On this show, on the Bohemian Podcast, we've also talked about some other Swedish connections to what has happened here in Bohemia. One in particular was one of the more haunted castles in all of Czech Republic. It's known as Huska Castle and its gateway to hell. Now, this story about a giant chasm opening up underneath a church during the early Middle Ages caused a great deal of interest because no one could actually fill the hole, and there was a sulfuric sort of smell to it. So there's a lot of talk about this being a gateway to hell, and sort of the occult feeling kind of was centered around the Huska Castle, which actually lasted well into the 20th century when the Nazi occupation came in. They also took control of this castle and did experiments there on the occult. But going back to the Swedish invasion in the 1640s, we can see that there was a commander by the name of Aranto who also dabbled in black magic, and he decided that this castle would be home to his laboratory in 1639. And what it was doing was there seemed to terrify the local peasants so much that they assassinated him. At the 17th century, at the time of the Thirty Years' War, during a period when the castle Huska stood empty and was chosen by the Swedish rogue commander of his brigades and mercenaries, this headquarters became a center of occult study. Aranto was also reputed to be involved in black magic and alchemy, and he performed unsavory experiments in the castle, some say with experiments on local citizenry. Not only this, but during the time of Aranto's occupation, his soldiers became a terror to the local village people until at least two hunters willing to risk the consequences snuck up to the Huska Castle in the middle of the night and shot Aranto through the window, supposedly, as he was working on his laboratory to discover the elixir of eternal life. You can get more of that information on our History of Alchemy podcast for sure. So that has a Swedish connection at Huska Castle. But another interesting sort of connection with the Swedish invasion dealt with the Codex Giga, better known as the Devil's Bible.
Yeah, so we brought this up pretty thoroughly in the Rudolf II episode. Again, it's a really cool story, so why not kind of go over it again a little bit? So the Codex is believed to have been created by Hermann the Recluse and the Benedictine monk of Podlažice near Chudim in the Czech Republic. Chudim also is where Jan Midlars is from, the famous executioner. See, we're tying it all together here. It's all coming around. Now, the monastery was destroyed during the 15th century in the Hussite Wars. Records within the Codex end at the year 1229. And the Codex was later pledged to the Cistercian Sedlec Monastery and then brought to the Benedictine Monastery in Brzezno. And it was kept there for over a century in a monastery in Brumov until it was taken to Prague in 1594 because of a direct order by no less than Rudolf II himself. Now, at the end of the 30 Years' War, and there's all... So, guys, if you guys want to hear more about what this Bible is, it is huge. It is, you know, a meter 50 by a meter 50 by a meter. It's like... Yeah, it's vellum. Like 200 animals had to die because of this book. It is the biggest medieval manuscript, and it's called the Devil's Bible for a reason. But to find out that reason, you're going to have to listen to the other episode. But in any case, at the end of the 30 Years' War in 1648, the entire collection, you know, Rudolf II, we'd mentioned he has all kinds of, he had nails from Noah's Ark and, you know, coins from Judas's betrayal and all that kind of stuff, not to mention a Holy Grail or two. And the entire collection was taken as war booty by the Swedish army. So from 1649 to 2007, it was kept in the Swedish Royal Library in Stockholm. By the way, it took at least two guys to carry that Bible. So from Prague to Stockholm, that is not a short distance. So the 7th of May, 1697, a fierce fire broke out at the royal castle in Stockholm, and the royal library suffered very badly. The codex was rescued from the flames by being thrown out of a window. So the codex had its own little mini defenestration here. The codex apparently injured a bystander, and some of its leaves fluttered away, and they are still missing today, basically, which is pretty sad. But in any case, in September 2007, after 359 years, the Codex Giga returned to Prague on loan from Sweden until January 2008, and was on display at the Czech National Library. Czechs and tourists alike lined up for hours to view the Bible for the short time it was on display here in Prague. There's documentaries about it, and there's all kinds of things you guys can find if you're more interested.
One thing that sticks out to me is I've been to Stockholm a couple times, and it's very hard to find a lot of things in their Military History Museum or any other museums that they have there, which are actually very fine museums. But they don't have a whole lot of the booty that they took from Bohemia. They do have them, but they don't really promote them. Because I think there's this modern-day sort of want by the Czech government to maybe get some things back that were taken that are considered national property. But if you were to do that, I mean, that imagine you'd have to close down the museums in London and some of these other great museums that have things from Egypt and other places because they have that kind of connection to culture and nationalism. But it is hard to find those things. They do have them. The Devil's Bible is pretty much put in their archives, and on a very rare occasion you're able to have a viewing. It really doesn't leave Stockholm that much other than that one time in 2007 when it came here to Czech Republic. And another moment I kind of want to bring this to a close as we're wrapping up our podcast tonight is the sheer loss of the architecture and the treasure that was here because of the looting. It brings to mind a lot of things that go on right now in our current world with Islamic State going into places in Iraq and looting and stealing and destroying statues and those type of things that are in there because of religious viewpoints. And, you know, as amateur historians, it hurts. It hurts to see these things that have been around for thousands or hundreds of years that are just laid waste to by people that want to do damage and see things burn. And one of those things that comes to mind with this particular story is what Travis alluded to, was the room that Emperor Rudolf II had with all his things that he had gathered throughout his reign here in Prague. Things that were considered to be, you know, a piece of wood from Noah's Ark, or some of the beautiful sort of commissions that he had done by the famous artists of the known world, maps and information and books in his wonderful library, all gone. Nothing really much left. So when you do come to Prague to see, maybe take a tour of Prague Castle or go to Brno, you might just see bits and pieces of things that the tour guide might say, this was actually a much bigger portrait or a much bigger picture, but we saved this part because it was important enough that wasn't burned completely by the Swedes when they left town. Interesting history, to say the least, but next time you walk across Charles Bridge, Travis, and you kind of take in the very touristy feeling of the beauty of Prague, remember that was the scene of a hand-to-hand combat that had Prague in its balance, that it could have been razed to the ground. But if it wasn't for a quick-thinking commander and a bunch of ragtag civilians, Prague wouldn't probably be the city that we see today. So we want to thank you very much for listening to the Bohemian Podcast today. We have a couple quick announcements. Please remember that our Facebook page is gaining more notoriety. We have a new Bohemian YouTube channel, so you can actually see Travis and I actually do things visually with our tours across the Czech Republic or taking in some neat things that are going here in Prague. You can also go to bohemian.com to see what's the latest for both the YouTube channel and our audio podcasts. And also podcastnik.com, which is a website that Travis put together that has both his projects and my projects together as a one-stop shop to kind of look at everything that we're doing. That's podcastnik, N-I-K.com. for a complete review of all our projects together. So for Travis Dow, I'm Pete Coleman saying Naskladano from Prague.
You have been listening to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow. Visit bohemican.com for more information on this episode, other episodes, and much more information about history, traditions, and culture in the Czech Republic. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, and review, and don't forget to rate us. We would love to hear from you. Send comments, ideas, and corrections on our comments page on bohemican.com, or get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. Tune in to our sister podcast, History of Alchemy, which is also on iTunes or on historyofalchemy.com. Until next time on the Bohemican Podcast, thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.